Good morning, everyone. Thank you. First, I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Valerie Rambelleson, Raman Nair, Ronald Labonte, and Ghislaine Recouturisson. can I click to get to the... Okay. I have no financial relationships to disclose. As background, this work is part of a larger project funded by the Health Economics and AIDS Research Division of KwaZulu-Natal. We're moving away from the United States quite substantially right now, I should say. And this is to explore, the bigger project is to explore linkages between processes of globalization and vulnerability to HIV. In doing so, this project contributes to understandings of whether or not wealth or poverty drive the sexual behavior that might lead to vulnerability to HIV, and contributes to recent discussions about motivations behind transactional sex for young women in sub-Saharan Africa. And by that I mean sex for money exchange that's embedded in broader social contexts and realities. Conventionally, it's considered was described as survival sex within the context of highly unequal gendered power relations. But more recent research has pointed to motivations for transactional sex as choices that women make as sexual agents in order to access designer commodities and modern lifestyles. And even more recently, some researchers have suggested that maybe it's sort of a broad, nuanced combination of these motivations. Our study took place in Madagascar, which is a very poor country with actually a relatively low HIV prevalence of about 1%. I'll be focusing on the capital city, which is right there in the middle, Antananarivo, and then a comparison region of Antsiranana, which is up here in the north. In terms of backgrounds about sociocultural and sexual behavior differences between those two regions, a number of surveys have shown big differences in sexual behavior and sexual outcomes between these two regions in the country. And that's at least in part explained by some different sociocultural realities, and we hypothesized also some socioeconomic differences. For example, the urban ethnic group which resides in and around Antananarivo, which are called the Marina, self-identify as the most Christian of the populations in Madagascar. And there's an implicit sort of notion of superiority and in there as well. But they describe very high values on women's chastity and sort of patriarchal notions as such. And then in Antsiranana, in our comparison site, among other regions in Madagascar, there's a traditionally normative exchange of gifts or money that follows sex in that part of the country. And this plays out in certainly in different prevalences of reported transactional sex behavior between the two regions. But I should also mention that since the colonial period, education rates have been much higher in Antananarivo, and also access to healthcare is much greater there than other regions of the country. That said, there are certainly many adults who have expressed concern about youth sexual practices in and around Antananarivo. While I was there researching sex work in 2003, 2004, I had many conversations about the concerns about youth's lost moral footing, a resultant primacy that's been placed on money and accessing things material at any cost, including women going out at night to find partners in order to be able to get to these material desires. And at about the same time, anthropologist Jennifer Cole was studying in another part of the country, where she argued that young women were using transactional sex as a means for social and economic accumulation towards social mobility. And so based on this background, we set out to answer the question, to what extent is sexual behavior associated with interest in consumption among youth in Antananarivo and Antsiranana, Madagascar? And we expected that women's sexual behavior motivated by such interests would be reflected in higher overall reported sexual risk-taking behavior among poor women, who are in need of basic commodities but were unable to access the more desirable designer commodities, and that it would increase with family wealth toward the middle quintile and then fall again in the higher quintiles where women had their own means of accessing such commodities. And we expected also that the socio-cultural distinctions in reported sexual behavior between the two regions would be attenuated by socioeconomic determinants. So we used mixed methods to examine this research question, focus groups and in-depth interviews, but I'm going to be focusing today on the population-based survey of youth, which was a three-tiered cluster survey of 15 to 24-year-olds in three regions in Antananarivo and then the comparison in urban Antsiranana. So we asked youth respondents about their household characteristics, sociodemographics, complete income and expenditure from the previous month, their consumption of designer goods. And then for sexual behavior, we asked about their first sexual experience, their number of sexual partners in their lifetime, and then in the last 12 months, condom, family planning use. We asked a direct question about transactional sexual behavior, which I'll get to in a minute. We also asked detailed understanding of their two most recent sexual partners in the last 12 months and if and what gifts or money had been exchanged with that partner, and then condom use with that partner. So for today, I'm going to be reporting on two specific sexual behavior outcomes. The first is whether or not they reported having multiple sexual partners, and this is among youth who report having had sex in the past 12 months, those who report having two or more partners in that time period, regardless of their marital status. And from the focus groups, we get an understanding that this does capture a little bit of the essence of transactional sex, because youth would talk about the value of having additional partners was based in the financial gain that you could get from those partners. However, there's a limit to this, the variable construction, because it doesn't specify concurrency, but just multiple partners in the course of a year. And then we also are going to look at among those who ever had sex, those who report ever having had sex in order to receive a gift or money. And that was how we worded the question. We worded the question very specifically with the motivation in the question, did you ever have sex in order to receive a gift or money? And that was to try to control for the normative behavior that exists in the northern region, where if you ask a woman, did you receive a gift after sex, she'd say, well, yeah, of course I did. So, but did you have sex in order to receive that gift? So that's why we worded the question that way. And there were also indirect ways that we tried to measure transactional sex that, unfortunately, I can't report to you on today because of time constraints, and then also we're still playing with a lot of the details of the variables. Okay, so to familiarize you with the study population, more of the men than the women were in this age range, which makes sense. We're single. Women marry a bit younger. About three quarters were of the Marina ethnicity, which is the ethnic group in and around Antananarivo. And in Antananarivo, in the region of Antananarivo, 80% were of Marina ethnicity. Men's education is a little bit higher than women's. Women actually report a higher mean expenditure, which is our estimate of their income, a higher mean expenditure than, I just lost the mouse, than men. But if you control for marital status, then that falls, because women are the money keepers of the household. So it evens out once you control for marital status. And the source of where income is coming from, for men, it's more likely to be coming from paid labor only, whereas for women, it's more likely to be coming from a combination of paid labor and or people, in some cases, certainly partners. Expenditure spent on designer goods, so this is the percent of their total expenditures that were spent on what we categorize as designer goods, so about almost a quarter. In this very poor country, 45% of the population owns their own cell phone. And we asked about whether or not people perceived that they follow fashion, and over 50% said that they never are able to. 2% of men said that they can follow fashion often or always, and 1.4% of women suggested they could. In terms of sexual behavior, over 50% of men have ever had sex, whereas under that for women, many more men report having had multiple partners in the last 12 months than women. Less than 2% of men report ever having sex in order to receive gifts or money, so they're the receivers in the exchange. Just under 6% of women did. And then condom uses with their most recent sexual partner, only 31% of men report this, 19% of women, but again, if you control for marital status, that percent for women goes up to just under men's. And so now looking at how some of these relationships vary by socioeconomic status. First, we look at young men and wealth. For men, there seems to, and this is an household asset-based wealth index that divided by quintile. And these are young people, so this is their, you know, most often their parents or their guardians' households that we're looking at. So there isn't much of a relationship between wealth and sexual behavior for men, although it does seem that it's among the wealthiest quintile that men are more likely to report ever having had sex. Men are slightly more educated. The men who are slightly more educated have reported having these sexual behaviors. The big story is the income, measured by expenditure. So, among men who have ever had sex, they report more than twice the level of expenditures than those who haven't. And then this magnitude jumps again for two or more partners. Men who have had two or more partners, they report having a mean expenditure in the last month of nearly 77,000 ariary as compared to, that's a Malagasy currency, as compared to only 55 for those who haven't. There are some differences by region in among men, but they weren't significant in sort of main effects. Among women, the relationship changes a bit. We had expected to see higher levels of risky sexual behavior among poor women, and that's not what we found. While poor women are slightly more likely to report ever having had sex, this relationship changes. Again, if you control for marital status, that disappears, as poor women are more likely to marry younger. But among those women who had had sex in the last year, there's a clear and strong positive relationship between reporting ever having had multiple partners and family wealth. So the percent of women in each quintile who report having had multiple partners rises almost directly with their family's wealth. And then for transactional sex, did you have sex in order to receive gifts or money? Again, we expected to see higher rates among poor women, a tapering off in the highest quintile, and instead it's lower among poor women and rises again with family wealth. And to some extent, this might reflect relative versus absolute wealth, as this is a poor country, but nonetheless, the relations aren't what we expected. The relationship between education and sexual behavior is reversed for women, so women have lower levels of education if they report ever having had sex or engaged in transactional sex compared to those who haven't. Again, the relationship between sexual behavior and reported expenditures is at least as strong as it is for men. So women who have engaged in each sexual behavior report significantly higher levels of expenditure, and this is in the thousands, so 80,000 ariary as compared to 15,000 for those who have it, and then this jumps to 115,000 and then 142,000 for those who had sex for money exchange. Obviously indicative of money received from sexual partners, at least to some extent. Unlike for men, peri-urban residence for women in sexual exchange is a bit more risky than urban. That's also something that we didn't anticipate. But what we expected to see and what we do see is that the comparison region of Ansaranana has a riskier, higher rates of multiple partners and also sex for money exchanges compared to anywhere in Antananarivo. And then that also holds up in by ethnic identity within Antananarivo or in the whole sample. And so now to look at this at the multivariate level. First, we looked at the odds of men having had multiple partners in the last 12 months. It's not surprisingly significantly lower if they're in a union or married. We're grateful for that. Significantly higher with increasing average expenditure. That holds up in the multivariate model. And in the presence of wealth and income variables, there's a weak indication that the odds of having multiple partners increases for those men who suggest that following fashion is important or very important. And finally, there's a weak association between non-Marin ethnicity and peri-urban residents. Okay, for women and multiple partners, women's family wealth, household wealth index remains significantly positively associated with the odds of having two or more partners in the multivariate model. The odds of a woman in a union or legally married reporting two or more partners is very low. The most significant association in the model was again ethnicity. Even controlling for all the socioeconomic variables, the ethnic distinctions remained highly significant. And then women's reporting of multiple partners was significantly positively associated with gains to the reported expenditures as well over the course of the last month. In addition, there's a negative association with age and an association with consumption of alcohol in the past 4 weeks. And generally, women aren't expected to drink alcohol in this cultural setting, and it is considered a modern thing to do. So this does suggest a little bit of, in terms of the women's lifestyles who are reporting on having multiple partnerships. And then finally, looking at the odds of having reported to having sex in order to receive gifts or money in the last 12 months for young women. You see education, ethnicity, marital status, and expenditures are all highly significant. And in addition, the notion of being considering yourself someone who's always or often able to follow fashion holds up in this model in the presence of all these other variables. wealth was not significant in the multivariate model, but education is significantly negatively associated. Okay. There are a number of limitations to this study. The biggest one, of course, is the cross-sectionality of it, and so we can't get as nice of an understanding as we'd like to as to how these expenditures, which are so significantly determining sexual behavior and for both men and women, are really operating as much as we'd like to. And then, as I alluded to before, the small sample size and cell size has made it difficult to look at. We tried to categorize based on the most recent sexual partners that women and men reported on and the sort of qualitative data on what kind of gifts they received or how much money they received and what they spent that money on. We try to categorize whether or not it was something for a basic commodity, a more designer commodity, or it could be characterized as both. And we still need to play with how we're going to work with these because the sample sizes are quite small. So to be continued on that, which is too bad because that was something much of interest. So in terms of discussion and conclusion at this preliminary point, it seems like anthropologist Jennifer Cole's notion that women are using transactional sex towards economic and potentially social capital accumulation may be the case based on what we're seeing from these data. And if that's the case, then poor women seem to be getting a bit, taking out notions of sexual risk right now. Poor women are getting left behind. They're reporting fewer partners and less sex for money exchange or material exchange, and the data suggests that sexual partners equals higher incomes, and wealthier women are reporting more partners, and To me, the data seem to suggest that this means that this new means of social and economic capital accumulation is not benefiting the poor. On the flip side, this data is also suggesting that relatively wealthier and richer women and men seem to be placing themselves at greater sexual health risk than poorer women and men, which runs counter to more conventional assumptions about poverty and health and vulnerability to diseases like HIV, but does add to the literature suggesting that that wealth is driving sexual risk in parts of sub-Saharan Africa. And finally, these data do continue to insist that even when controlling for socioeconomic variables, sociocultural distinctions are hugely important. We tried to control for the normative understanding of sex for money exchange in Antsiranana through the way that we worded the question, but even in doing this and then in the multivariate models, controlling for socioeconomic status, that determinant remained extremely significant, which just confirms the understandings that when addressing sexual health prevention, we absolutely must take local sociocultural context into account. I need to acknowledge the funders and certainly thank all of the youth and adult participants in this study. Thank you. Yes.
I found it really interesting that it was the second quartile from the top of women who had the most sex for money. And I was wondering if it's something about that they're at the point that they can aspire to higher levels, and the ones who are at the top may not need that as much.
That was kind of the hypothesis that, I mean, we expected to see a bit of a dip towards the highest quintile for transactional sex, but we also expected to see it higher in the poorer quintile. So. But yeah, I think, and it may be something, it may very well have something to do with the level of relative wealth in the country of Madagascar, and so it might be just at that second to highest quintile where women can even enter the game. I mean, right now there's, youth talk about the notions of, and this is something that Jennifer Cole talked about in her work, of success as being measured by, how much you can get your hands on notions of modernity among youth, in particular in the urban context. And, if you're too poor to even get the right things to wear and ways to look, then you're not going to be able to attract the kinds of partners that are a little bit wealthier and are going to be able to give you access to, bigger and better things and from their perspective. And so, it might be just that it's only at that quintile of wealth where women are able to take advantage of that. That's what I'm wondering, thinking as well. Yes?
I was struck also by the same slide about the correlation between wealth and more likely to have more partners and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't know which way the causality is going.
Well, I definitely agree with you on expenditures for that, because that's an immediate, we measured last month's total, what did you spend your money on last month? But the wealth is, it's a household asset-based index, what kind of roof, floor, and it correlates, it doesn't, we looked at the relationships between wealth and income, and there's no correlation between the wealth and the expenditure model variables. They are measuring different things. The wealth is correlated with your father's education. It's correlated with your own education. So I do actually think, not 100% as a cross-sectional survey, I agree it does seem that this is really your family's background wealth that. And what it could be is, and what I didn't get a chance to talk about today is, these relationships are happening two directions. I mean, men are also seeking partners for financial benefit, and a more wealthy woman might be a more attractive partner. And what's interesting is that men don't have that same relationship. Their household wealth has no bearing on whether or not they have multiple partners. I don't know how they're able to convince a wealthier woman. I'm wondering if that's what's going on, but if a savvy young guy can convince a woman from a wealthy family to, it just seems to me like wealthier women are more desirable. I mean, that's kind of how I'm understanding it right now, but I would love to hear other ideas on this.
I had a second question. It had to do with the poor women left behind. I mean, wouldn't it also be possible that the poor women have higher principles?
I hope so. And we have 104 in-depth interviews from subsamples of these surveys that we need to really look at, and we will answer that question once we do, because those interviews talk about their and they were randomly selected, so we get at everybody. So they'll get at stories of their romantic lives in the last year, sort of, and motivations behind those romances. And so I'm hoping we get a better sense of that. But I mean, in my previous work in Madagascar, I've also seen that the poorer you are, the less social capital. I mean, you're kind of, you know, everyone's poor, and so if you're really, really poor, people don't want to associate with you because then they'd have to help you, you know, and it's, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Sure, yeah, quite possibly. But the literature has also described how women are having multiple partners for survival. And I expected to see that in the transactional sex data, and I didn't. Yeah. Yeah, it's 2,000 RERE to the dollar, about. And so, you know, this, your mean expenditure being at about 41,000 is just under $20. I mean, this is a very, very poor. I mean, but these are youth who are often living at home, so that's expenditure probably on themselves, not more so than, you know, for their entire family. I mean, there are cases where the data is reflecting their entire family, but yeah, yeah. Any more questions or comments? I'd love any more feedback.
I had one question that I forgot to ask, but it might go beyond your study as well. You talked a lot about condom use and among the young adult population or the teen population, but did you look as well at other contraceptive use?
Very rare. All the other types were very, very rare.
Even using the pill, because it sometimes tends to increase like with age.
Yeah. The pill was very rare. I mean, it was less than 15% in each way. Hmm. And so the kind of, what causes somebody in urban Atlanta to use the pill is itself a very interesting question, because there's a lot of cultural baggage attached to that. So it's hard to say whether somebody using the pill or not using the pill has to do with their desire for pregnancy or their cultural, like the cultural valence of celibate. Because there's a sense of there's a study in Oakland, California, where they wanted to figure out how do you increase contraceptive use, and they found that all